This week on the news, we watched two major trials. Kyle Rittenhouse, a white man who killed two white men in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and three white men who killed Ahmaud Arbery, a black man in Brunswick, Georgia. They both have similar stories. Both shooters took up guns in the name of protecting the people, the public. Both shooters ended up killing unarmed people, two white people, one black person. And both claimed they're acting in self-defense. In both cases, the defendants claimed that they were justified in their shooting. Why? Because the victims were trying to take away their guns. In other words, their decision to carry a gun became a justification to use it, lest the gun be wrestled away from them. So even though these shooters provoked the crisis to begin with, they claimed they were killing in self-defense. These shooters are the faces of a gun movement out of control. As of Friday, the first trial is over, as you know, that of Kyle Rittenhouse. Shockingly, he was cleared of all the charges. What does that mean? It means it's okay to shoot unarmed people, as long as you do it in self-defense. I asked a friend of mine, John Erb, what he thought of that. He said, "I'm speechless." He said, "Can you imagine a similar outcome if Kyle Rittenhouse were black?" Now just think of a 17-year-old black teenager who buys an illegal AR-15 rifle, crosses state lines, comes into somebody else's neighborhood, provokes a crisis by raising the AR-15 rifle, shoots and kills two unarmed white people, and at his trial, this black teenager is cleared of all the charges because he did it in self-defense. There's not one person in this church who would think that that would happen. Let me tell a much different story. January 30th, 1956, in Montgomery, Alabama, Martin Luther King is preaching at a pulpit. Somebody comes up to him and whispers in his ear, "Your house has just been bombed." Dr. King speeds home, and he finds that Coretta's okay, and the two-month-old Yolanda is okay, unharmed. The bomb had exploded on the porch, and the glass shattered in the living room, and a crowd of black people were gathering outside the house, and they were ready to fight. One black man shouted to a white police officer, "You got your 38, I got my 38, let's fight this out." Young black men were picking up broken bottles. They were arming themselves for a fight. And Dr. King came out on his broken porch. He motioned for silence. He told the crowd, "My wife and my baby are okay. I want you to put down your weapons, and I want you to go home." And they said, "No, we're not going home. I want you to go home because we're not going to solve the problem through retaliation." The crowd yelled back, "We're going to fight this out." Dr. King said, "No, we are not. We must love our white brothers, no matter what they do to us. We must make them know we love them. Jesus tells us, love your enemies. And this is what we're going to live by. We must meet their hate with love." Slowly, the people began to disperse. Later, a white policeman told a reporter, "I'll be honest, I was terrified. I owe my life to that black preacher, and so do all these other white people here." It was a great night for America. It was a great night for the world. America's greatest prophet taught us a lesson that night. You can't solve violence with more violence. The way of Jesus is nonviolence. It means accepting sufferings rather than inflicting sufferings. That's pretty hard to take, but that is the message of Jesus. Accept sufferings rather than inflict sufferings. Why? Because all people are our brothers and sisters. In today's gospel, there's another trial, just like the trials in Kenosha and Brunswick. This trial takes place in Jerusalem. A Palestinian Jew is on trial before the Roman governor, Pontius Pilate. A poor man from Galilee is on trial before the occupying forces of Rome. Pilate asks two questions of Jesus. "Are you a king? And What have you done? The first question, are you a king? Jesus says, yes, I am a king, but I'm not like you. You're a king too, but I'm not like you. If I were like you, I would have 12 legions of angels defending me. I would have 24,000 angels fighting violently in this battle. I would be like Kyle Rittenhouse, using violence to defend myself. But I'm not like that. Instead, I'm like Martin Luther King. I'm nonviolent. I'm willing to accept sufferings rather than to inflict them. My kingdom is an alternative kingdom, one based on nonviolence. The second question Pilate asks of Jesus, what have you done? He knows darn well what he did. He lives in the same city. Just a few days earlier, Jesus staged a huge peace demonstration on Palm Sunday. He organized this peace parade, riding into Jerusalem on a donkey, countering the military machine of the Roman Empire in a very dramatic way. It was a subversive act threatening the violence and domination of the Roman Empire. He was affirming an alternative kingdom by riding in on a peaceful donkey, one based on nonviolence. Then Jesus says to Pilate, the reason I was born and the reason I came here was to testify to the truth. Goes right over Pilate's head. He is totally bewildered. Truth. What is this guy talking about? He even says that. What is truth? What is truth? Because he has no idea what truth is. He's into violence. He's into control. He's into military power. The truth that Jesus taught us is the same truth that Martin Luther King taught us. What's the truth? We are one. We're all one. We're connected. We're brothers and sisters. That's the truth. If I hurt you, I hurt myself. If I harm you, I harm me. Because we're one. That's the truth. Pilate had no idea what he's talking about. And the only way to know truth is if you practice nonviolence. Many of you know Sister Helen Prejean. She ministers to people on death row. She wrote the book Dead Man Walking. She's been allowed into the death chamber only once in her lifetime, and that was in Virginia in 1997. She stood next to the gurney, put her hand on the prisoner's shoulders, and she prayed that he would know that he was a precious human being, that he possessed a sacred dignity like everybody else, that he is made in God's image and likeness, and her hand was on his shoulder as the prisoner was executed. This month, a prisoner in Texas requested that his chaplain do the same thing that Sister Helen did, to touch him and pray while he was being executed. But the prison denied the request. They said the chaplain could stand near him, but he was not allowed to touch him during the execution. Just another way to demonize the man. The state considers his crime so heinous that not only will he be deprived of his life, he will also be deprived of somebody who loves him, touching him while he's being executed. One last reminder that he's worth nothing more than disposable waste. Sister Helen says about it, this prisoner in Texas was not innocent. He did commit a major crime. Nevertheless, everybody is a child of God. Everybody is a brother and sister, no matter what. So Jesus tells Pilate, I came to testify to the truth, that all people, no matter what they've done, have dignity and value. All people are precious in God's eyes. My kingdom is an alternative kingdom to your kingdom. A person who believed in an alternative kingdom was Margaret Whitman. Many of you came to her funeral last Friday. Margaret used to sit right there next to Tom. She used to bring up the groceries once a month for the grocery collection. She was a humble servant, not a grandstander, not an upfront leader. Margaret grew up very poor during the Depression. Her parents never had a car. They were actually so poor that they could not even afford to raise her. For a couple years, they shipped her off to her grandparents in Utica because they could not afford to raise her. She came to our church in 1978, a very humble servant. For 40 years, she was a sacristan, a sound engineer, a receptionist, an archivist. She was a person behind the scenes. She also had a heart for the poor, for helping out needy people, and she never told anybody about it. When Jim Smith wanted to start a restaurant to employ ex-offenders coming from jail, she gave the $37,000 we needed to buy that building. By the way, Jim, happy birthday. When Julie Smith wanted to start the Corpus Christi Child Care Center, Margaret again donated the entire cost, $25,000, for 84 Prince Street. When Sister Margie wanted to start Dimitri House on Union Street for the homeless, Margaret again donated $100,000 to buy it. When Sarah Brownell ran out of money to feed the people in Bourne, Haiti, Margaret donated $10,000. Where did Margaret get the money? She lived on a pension from New York State. She worked for the Department of Labor and her Social Security. Those were her incomes. She drove an 18-year-old used Toyota. She shopped at the dollar store. She was a humble servant who lived simply so that she could help other people. At her funeral, we read Matthew 25. The king told people on his right, "Come and enter my kingdom. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was sick and in prison and you came to visit me." Notice the terminology. The king said to the people helping out the poor, "Come enter my kingdom," the alternative kingdom. He's not talking about something after you die. You're in the kingdom. You're in the alternative kingdom when you are acting nonviolently and helping the poor. And I was thinking today the small Christian community is organizing a food collection after Mass. People, a lot of you brought your food, and you're going to distribute it or bring it over to the parking lot after Mass. You are in the kingdom. Those of you who are feeding the poor, you're in the kingdom. You're in this alternative kingdom that Jesus is talking about. And you know what? You can't get into this kingdom without a letter of recommendation from the poor. Margaret Whitman understood this alternative kingdom, and if we really want to eliminate violence in the world, we would abolish hunger. If we really want peace, we would abolish poverty, homelessness, and disease. If we really want tranquility, we'd fight for justice. Margaret frequently stood in front of the cathedral holding a big sign saying, "Ordain women." She's 93 years old. "Ordain women." She marched in the Labor Day parade for farm workers' justice. When we do acts of mercy and justice, we are in the kingdom, this alternative kingdom of God. A week ago, we had a funeral for Susan Hotaling, a member of our church. She was born in Korea. As a baby, she was abandoned in a railroad station. And as a baby, she was bounced around from orphanage to orphanage. And finally, Eric and Jean Hotaling from our church adopted her. When they picked her up at JFK Airport, she was severely malnourished, and her hair was very thin. She didn't actually warm up to Jean for months because she didn't trust any mother figures. Susan was part of our religious ed program. She was in our nativity play. Very smart kid, also very compassionate to others because her own suffering in Korea opened her heart to the sufferings of other people. Unfortunately, she died of a heart attack at age 46. At her funeral, somebody told a story about her. When Susan was with a group of friends in their 20s, somebody says, "Does anyone have a recipe for a hot Asian dish?" And she said, "I'm available." I thought of Susan when I heard that Sesame Street is adding a Korean character. Did you hear that? The newest Muppet of Sesame Street, after all these years, is Ji-young. That's Korean for smart and brave. Ji-young is making history as the first Asian-American Muppet. She was created in the wake of anti-Asian hate crimes and George Floyd's death. Ji-young will teach children how to be a good upstander. Upstander. An upstander means you point out things that are wrong, like when somebody says something negative about one's skin color, or somebody's language, or where they come from, or tells them to go back home, something that Asian Americans hear a lot these days, unfortunately. Ji-young will tell other children that they can be upstanders. The Muppets' mission is to teach other kids to speak out against racism, as well as normalizing seeing different kinds of kids on TV. It gives kids an early understanding of the beauty of diversity in the world, which is a secular way of saying the alternative kingdom of God. Jesus tells Pilate, "Yes, I am a king, but I'm not a violent king like you. I came to bring an alternative, not the kingdom of Caesar, but the kingdom of God. Not a kingdom of Second Amendment rights, but a kingdom of nonviolence. People look for a lion. I came as a lamb. People look for a warrior. I came as a peacemaker. People look for a military king. I came as a servant. I once had the privilege of meeting a bishop, Ken Untner was his name. Bishop Untner was from Saginaw, Michigan. Very humble man, he lived out of his car. Instead of having an Episcopal mansion, he lived every weekend at a different rectory in the diocese. He went from church to church to get to know the people better. When he was made the Bishop of Saginaw, he spoke at his installation, and he wanted to let the people know he would be part of an alternative kingdom. And so here's how he began his talk. "Hi, my name is Ken, and I will be your server."